Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasta Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Niravishesha Shunyavadi Pastya Chadeshtarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pramanuchananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha. Paditanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita ki jai. Srila Sanatana Goswami ki jai. Go Premanandi. All right, so Narada Muni is glorifying the Pandavas as the greatest recipients of the mercy of the Lord. And he's been emphasizing how the Pandavas have received so much mercy by particularly, at least up till this point, by glorifying Krishna himself. What is the unique position of Krishna compared to the different avatars? He mentioned Nrisimhadev, Vamana, Matsya was mentioned, Lord Ram was mentioned. But the point has been, generally, that Krishna is, for example, much more merciful, more powerful, and even to the point that the devotees of Krishna, they're also so great, they reflect the extra greatness of the Lord. So we finished verse 28, and now we're going to go on to verse 29. We speak of Krishna's kindness, but even the punishments he metes out are worthy of praise. To this, there have been many witnesses, including Kamsa, Kaliya, and Putana, and in the more distant past, Bali and others. Yes. So, it's a special feature of the nature of Krishna as compared to his avatars also, that when he wants to speak of his affection for his devotees being unlimited and just incomparable, but even when he punishes, that is just totally beneficial to the recipient. This is very amazing. Therefore, Krishna is very, very amazing. So here, some examples are given, Kamsa, Kaliya, Putana, going back in time, Bali Maharaj. So, in the purport here, first of all, Kamsa is mentioned. He's the first one mentioned in the verse. And the point there is that Kamsa, just shortly before he was killed by Krishna, Kamsa was in a state of anxiety that Krishna was going to kill him. And in this way, he couldn't forget Krishna wherever he was walking around, he would be in such a consciousness that, oh, Krishna is going to get me, that he'd be Krishna conscious. And when he tried to sleep, he couldn't sleep because he was thinking, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And just in general, things were going on like that for him. So in this way, even though, of course, he was killed by Krishna, and it was, you know, pretty dramatic event, but he became extremely purified by being killed by Krishna in that way, and well, not just killed by Krishna, but by being in that state of anxiety and always thinking about Krishna. He became purified and made spiritual advancement. Yes, so then when Krishna when Krishna finally killed him during the wrestling matches and everything in the arena of Kamsa, then Krishna jumped up onto the grandstand where Kamsa was, dragged him down, threw him down onto the ground within the arena, jumped on his chest and killed him. And in this way, Kamsa got the lotus foot of the Lord on his chest. And, oh, how beneficial is that? Even the great demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and so on, they're thinking, how can we get just one speck of dust from the lotus foot of Krishna? But Kamsa, he had the whole foot of the Lord just stuck on his chest. So, even though he was punished, it was huge mercy. Really amazing mercy. Yeah. So, other demons are mentioned from Kamsa's time that there was the wrestlers, what were their names? Chanura and Mushtika. They were also rascals, demons. They were just up to no good at all. Then they were allowed to get, you know, while they were wrestling with Krishna, they were able to embrace him in the course of different wrestling maneuvers and all of that. They were able to embrace Krishna. It's amazing. And who gets the opportunity to embrace the Lord? That's very rare. So like this, Krishna killed all these different people. Jarasandha, Shishupal Dantavakra are mentioned. So they got punished by the Lord and killed by the Lord. But in the course of that, they were highly benefited through the contact they had with Lord Krishna. Then, let's see. Kaliya, oh, the mercy that Kaliya got, it's inconceivable. Particularly in that, at the end there, just when Krishna broke free from Kaliya's grip and then jumped up on his heads, then Krishna started dancing on Kaliya's heads with his lotus feet. Those same lotus feet which Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, as we just mentioned, are praying to get a little dust from, if possible. But those same two lotus feet were just bashing and bashing and bashing in all these very fast and powerful dancing maneuvers of Lord Krishna on the heads of Kaliya. So he got punished and he almost died. Others did die, like we mentioned Chanura, Mushtika, Kamsa. They did die, but they got mercy in the course of dying. But Kaliya didn't die. Kaliya got so much mercy. The Lord just jumping around on and on and on and on for quite some time, just dancing on the heads of Kaliya. And then the gopis came, and they also joined Krishna in dancing on Kaliya's heads. So not only did Kaliya get the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord, but he also got the dust of the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, shoo, and other of the gopis, Lalita, Vishakha, Champaklata, etc., etc., etc. So, how much benefit? Oh, it's inconceivable. So, even in the course of being punished, demons, in this case Kaliya, got hugely benefited. Hugely benefited. So, and one other detail that Krishna put the mark of the Sudarshan disc on Kaliya's heads. Yeah, somehow or other. Because Krishna has different markings under his feet. And so those markings became imprinted on the heads of Kaliya, and like permanently imprinted on the heads of Kaliya. So later, when Garuda came, Garuda, who is traditionally an enemy of the snakes, he eats snakes. Garuda, of course, is non-veg. So he eats snakes. But later on, when he saw the marks of Krishna's lotus feet on Kaliya's heads, then Garuda decided he's not going to attack Kaliya. Not going to attack Kaliya. Because the Lord's sacred lotus feet, the impressions are on Kaliya's heads. So, like this, in different ways, these personalities got great mercy. Then mentioned also in the verse is Putana. Putana got great mercy. Because Krishna accepted her like a mother and drank some milk from her breast. And then, of course, Krishna killed Putana. But when Krishna killed Putana, then Lord Krishna gave her the position of a nurse in Goloka Vrindavan. This is it's a parental position, but as a mother, a type of mother. A nurse is a type of mother. You know, if you read in Bhagavad Gita, there's one verse there in the earlier parts where the different types of mothers are listed out. The cow is a mother, the biological mother, of course, is a mother. But the nurse, the nanny, is also a mother. Yes, so like this. Krishna gave mercy to Putana even when he was punishing her. And as a result of all that, when her body was burnt after Krishna had killed her, because all her sinful reactions had been removed by Krishna killing her. So, in this way, when her body was burnt, there was a very fragrant, beautiful smell. And very nice. And there was rain that fell, which picked up that very beautiful smell from the smoke which was coming from her burning body. And so you had this fragrant rain falling. It's amazing. How often do you get fragrant rain? You know, sometimes here in South Africa, when they burn the sugarcane fields after harvesting the sugarcane, cutting all the cane, then they burn the sort of old rubbish and stuff that's left on the ground after the main canes are cut. And you get this fragrant air just spreading all around for kilometers. Wow, it's amazing. Anyway, yes. So here in the purport, well, in the verse itself, these different people are mentioned. Kamsa, Kaliya, Putana, Bali Maharaj is mentioned. But in the purport, others are mentioned. Others are mentioned, like the Nalakuvra Manigriva, the twin Arjuna trees. So they're mentioned. They got mercy from Krishna. Agasura, he was graced by Krishna's entrance into his body, Agasura. And in this way, he got liberation. And he got liberation in such a way that just astonished people. It was really quite amazing. Anyway, so the thing is, all these different examples are given. How he punished the gopis by leaving them during the rasa dance. It was a type of punishment, but it deepened their attachment to him. So like this, it was a type of punishment that Krishna just abandoned them, but it was for their spiritual benefit. It was mercy. And they became more advanced devotees as a result. Then Bali Maharaj, of course, Bali Maharaj is mentioned in the verse. And Bali, if you know the story from the 8th canto, Bali Maharaj surrendered everything to the Lord when the Lord took his 3 steps of land. Then, with 2 steps, he covered the whole universe. He'd been promised 3. And then the Lord asked Bali Maharaj, so You told me I get 3 steps of land. You've only given me 2. That's not good. And he arrested Bali to punish him. He arrested him to punish him. But in the course of doing that, when Bali Maharaj finally surrendered everything, well, the Lord took 2 steps, covered the whole universe, and asked Bali Maharaj, where can I put my 3rd step? Then in this mood of complete surrender, Bali Maharaj said, just put it on my head, which the Lord did. So as a result, he got great mercy. Bali Maharaj got great mercy from Lord Vamana. And there's mention here that the Lord took up the post of doorkeeper at Bali's palace. The Lord was so pleased with Bali for his full surrender that he became his doorkeeper or security man at the front gate to keep unwanted people out. So the Lord took up the post of doorkeeper at Bali's palace and defended the palace gates from the incursion of Ravana. So even Ravana tried to attack Bali, but the Lord kept Ravana away as the doorkeeper, as the security man. And when Devasa begged Lord Vamana to leave Bali for some time and defend Devasa against the demon Kusha, Lord Vamana refused to do so without Bali's permission. Just see how merciful the Lord is. The Lord was acting as a security man. Devasa Muni came and begged the Lord to come to protect him. Bali said, no, I'm not coming unless, Lord Vamana said, no, I'm not coming unless Bali Maharaj gives his permission. Yes, so it's very amazing. So now we go into a little different section here. Let's just go straight into it. Verse 30. Sri Pariksit said, while singing enthusiastically in this way, the sage instructed his own tongue, which was greedy to chant the glories of Lord Madhava. Oh, you are too busy talking about the greatness of our master. To stop that tongue, he then seized it with his teeth. Oh, Krishna. So, jokingly, Narada chastised his tongue, but the tongue was just relishing too much nectar and wouldn't stop. So Narada had to grab the tongue physically. 31. Dear tongue, he then acknowledged, this effort of yours attests to your great fortune. As far as you're able, just go on speaking something about these beloved devotees of Krishna. So, to avoid discouraging his tongue, Narada Muni told his tongue, listen, if you can't glorify Krishna, at least glorify his devotees. At least glorify his devotees. Yes. And if you can't describe everything about the glories of the devotees, at least describe something about their glories. Yes. Even actually Narada is proposing to his tongue, you would do better to glorify the Lord's devotees than to glorify the Lord. Yes. Because the thing is, you see, that the Lord, he's just in another dimension of existence. And to glorify him fully, it's completely out of the question. But to Narada, the Lord's devotees, they appear like ordinary people. I mean, just in general, the devotees appear outwardly to be like ordinary people, or at least similar to ordinary people. And therefore, he feels that his tongue should be able to glorify them nicely because they have these similarities to ordinary people. And if the tongue makes false statements about them or distorts the descriptions of their activities, then the devotees will easily overlook these things because the devotees are always very compassionate to unfortunate persons. So therefore Narada is recommending to his tongue, listen, best thing to do, just glorify the devotee. Sri Narada continued, O great saintly Pandavas, is anyone bold enough to let his tongue describe the unique love for Krishna that each of you has, or the special mercy he bestows upon you? So Narada is feeling himself unfit, that only a shameless person would try to elaborately describe the glories of the Pandavas, which just, you know, you just can't do it. So Narada feels he just can't stop. Therefore, he's shameless. He can't stop, because his tongue is reluctant to speak about anything else. Reluctant to speak about anything else, but refuses to remain silent. So it's a sort of catch-22, you could say. Excuse me. Verse 33. Your mother, Prita, once heard from the mouth of Akrura a single statement by Krishna, sweet with affection and meant to console her. As soon as she heard it, she plunged into a swiftly flowing current of prema. So what happened was that it's described in the 10th canto, 48th chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna asked Akrura to visit the Pandavas to see how they were dealing with the harassments from Duryodhana. Yeah. And Krishna told Akrura This is 10:48:32. You are indeed the best of our friends. So please go to Hastinapur and, as the well-wisher of the Pandavas, find out how they are doing. So this was Krishna's request to Akrura, go find out how they're doing. So Akrura went and met them and did that. So when Akrura met Prita, Queen Kunti, this is in the forest, they're all in the forest, she's there with her sons and Draupadi in the forest. It's not an easy existence. So when Akrura met them and met Queen Kunti, this is what he said to her first of all, that I have come here because Lord Krishna has said, Lord Krishna told me that you, that's him, Akrura, I'm the best of our friends, so please go to Hastinapur, and as the well-wisher of the Pandavas, find out how they're doing. Akrura told Prita, Queen Kunti, this. And when Queen Kunti understood how Krishna was thinking of them and thinking of her, and was concerned, how are they doing? She was so deeply moved by the concern of the Lord. Yes. So that's amazing, isn't it? Because Akrura was a pure Vaishnav, the very first words she heard him speak kindled in her heart the ecstasies of love for Krishna. Verse 34, and again it's talking about Kunti, Prita. She often lamented with poignant words that could shatter the heart of anyone who heard them. And she bore the burden of love for all of you, staying tied to you only because you're very dear to Lord Krishna. Isn't that amazing? Staying with you and helping you and looking after you. Not just because she's your mother, but because you're devotees of Krishna. And she's so concerned for Krishna and so concerned for the well-being of devotees. Therefore, she was concerned about the well-being of the Pandavas. Yes, so Mother Prita fully trusted Krishna's protection because she was a surrendered soul. So any concerns about difficulties or anxieties were only, they weren't just like material anxieties, but they were her own special symptoms of ecstasy. She didn't hesitate to open her heart to Krishna, as she did during the reunion in Kurukshetra. There she said, listen to this. This is Bhagavatam 10:49, 11, and 12. Krishna, Krishna, O great yogi, O supreme soul, and protector of the universe, O Govinda, please protect me who have surrendered to you. I and my sons are being overwhelmed by trouble. For persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet. For you are the Supreme Lord. So naturally, as a pure devotee of the Lord, she wanted to give all her love to the Lord. and just no interest in material attachments and material relationships, etc. But because her sons were also exclusive devotees of the Lord, she maintained her affection for them. It's very beautiful. Very amazing. Okay. Here we go. It's getting a bit cool these days. Verse 35. Krishna, the life of the Yadus, tried for a long time to leave for Dwarika, but by enveloping him with plaintive prayers, she kept him in her house. So, yes, of course, this is referring to the 8th chapter of the first canto, which is titled The Prayers of Queen Kunti. And if you're familiar with those prayers, they're just such outstanding prayers. You just can't find better prayers than those. They're completely amazing. And they're so wonderful that even though Krishna, following the battle of Kurukshetra, even though Krishna wanted to leave Hastinapur and go back to Dwarka to his family and everything that was going on there, but Queen Kunti, Prita, kept saying prayers like these to him. And therefore, Lord Krishna stayed on for a few more months, would you believe? Not minutes, not hours even, not even days or weeks, but some months Krishna stayed on in Hastinapur, just because, or particularly because, Queen Kunti kept offering amazing prayers. The prayers as they appear in the 8th chapter of the first canto, that may not necessarily be all of her prayers. Sounds like there was many, many prayers she was submitting on a regular basis. Verse 36, Krishna bestowed upon Yudhisthira the highest prestige, greater than that of anyone else in the upper and lower worlds. And by favors, like allowing Bhima to kill Jarasandha, Krishna granted Bhima unequaled fame. So, yes, Yudhisthira, Krishna had Yudhisthira perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, which is a very high level sacrifice. Krishna helped Bhima dispose of Jarasandha, who was a major obstacle to that sacrifice. And Jarasandha repeatedly attacked Mathura, and Krishna had many opportunities to kill Jarasandha, but just so Bhima would get the fame from killing Jarasandha, Krishna waited for quite some time until Bhima was there and the time was right and Bhima was ready. So Bhima killed Jarasandha instead of Krishna killing him, which he could have very easily done. So Krishna patiently waited for the suitable opportunity so that the credit would go to Bhima. Alright, verse 37. Saintly Arjuna became renowned throughout the world for his intimate friendship with Krishna. I can never sing all the glories of Arjuna, even if I recite hundreds of Puranas. That's an amazing statement. So here, of course, we didn't read the Sanskrit, did we? But anyway, in the verse itself, Narada says, Bhagavan ayam Arjunascha priyasakyena gata prasidatam. So in the verse, Narada addresses Arjuna as Bhagavan, which is, well, generally, obviously, it's used for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But there are occasions, if you look here and there, a few occasions in Srimad Bhagavatam, really a few, where other people are addressed as Bhagavan, because they're very special people, particularly very special devotees who have done very amazing things. So Arjuna's like that. He's done so many amazing things. And all on the basis of his very intimate friendship with Lord Krishna. So, yes. So therefore Narada says, he's so glorious, I can't glorify him properly. Even if I recite hundreds of Puranas. Puranas are not small books. You know what Srimad Bhagavatam is like. It's not a small book. It's one Purana. There are bigger Puranas than Srimad Bhagavatam. And this use of this term Bhagavan for Arjuna, there's mention here from Vishnu Purana of how the term can be used. Listen to this. A person who knows about the creation and destruction of the universe, the karmic comings and goings of embodied creatures, and the forces of enlightenment and illusion may be called Bhagavan. Amazing. Wonderful. Boy, these pictures are amazing, aren't they? Look at these pictures. Hare Krishna. Okay, 38. And as for Nakula and Sahadev, everyone has seen many times how fixed they are in love for Krishna, as shown, for example, by how those twins behaved in the deliberations on whom to worship first in the Raja Suya. So that Raja Suya, that's, of course, that's where Lord Krishna killed Shishupal. And it was actually, if I remember correctly, it was Sahadev specifically, who during or at the beginning of that Raja Suya, when there was the necessity to choose who was the most sort of senior, respectable person there, who would preside over it. So Sahadev said, Krishna. And of course, generally everyone accepted, but of course Shishupal did not. Shishupal did not accept. And that's, you know, a bit of a long story, but he started criticizing and offending Krishna, and Krishna killed him. So, this is all showing how fixed both Nakula and Sahadev are in love for Krishna. such a fine example there at that Rajasuya of how particularly Sahadev, but actually they worked together as a team. So it wasn't just Sahadev said yes, Krishna, but it was Nakula and Sahadev ultimately, even though Sahadev may have spoken it. But the decision was mutual between the two of them. So, yes. So it says here, the twins Nakula and Sahadev worked together so closely that whatever either of them did could as well have been done by the other. And everything either of them did was impelled by pure love for Krishna. Thirty-nine, Lord Hari personally sanctified Sri Draupadi's hair during the Rajasuya sacrifice and other special festivals. He would call Draupadi dear friend. What's the Sanskrit for that? Let's just have a look here and see. Dear Priyasakhi, yeah. He would call her Priyasakhi. Sure. That's amazing, isn't it? He would call Draupadi dear friend. He relieved her of fear of Atri's son Devasa and fear of others, including Dushasana. He removed all her sorrow. Let me read this short purport here. During the Rajasuya and other sacrifices, Krishna with his own hand sprinkled Queen Draupadi's hair with water from the ritual vessel sanctified by mantras. He spoke to her with the affection reserved for intimate family members. He protected her in frightening situations involving Devasa Muni, the temperamental son of Atri, and saved her from the shame of being disrobed by Dushasana in the royal assembly. Finally, Krishna relieved all her pain by destroying Dushasana and his friends at Kurukshetra. Is it Draupadi with the pot, or is it Kunti? I guess it's Draupadi. I should check, actually, but I'm not really in a position to check. But there's the story. Is it Draupadi's pot or Kunti's pot? But it's one of the two of them, and the principle is the same. That when they're in exile, Duryodhana wanted to create trouble for the Pandavas. So he sent Devasa Muni and his 60,000 disciples to visit the Pandavas who were just living under the trees in the forest. And to go and visit them and ask for lunch. So, and of course, you know, for people just living in the forest, you can't cook a lunch for 60,000 people just like that, you know, in the matter of an hour or so. But that's what Duryodhana wanted to happen, and that's what Devasa Muni did. He went out there, arrived there, and asked for lunch for himself and his 60,000 disciples. And Draupadi or Kunti, I guess it's Draupadi, had a special pot that she could cook any amount of prasadam, of foodstuffs, any amount, just in one pot, even enough for 60,000 people. But only once in a day. and she had already cooked in it that day. So Devasa Muni came with his 60,000 disciples and said, right, we want lunch, thank you. And we'll just go, don't worry, we'll give you some time, we'll just go down to the river and take bath. You know, you've got at least half an hour or 45 minutes. And we'll come back and we want a nice lunch, thank you. And Draupadi, I guess, was in such anxiety. How am I going to do this? Because I've already used the pot. And I can only use it once in a day. And then Krishna came and said, all right, listen, just look in there, find a little scrap of prasadam and give it to me. And she looked, but she couldn't find anything. And then Krishna said, no, go on, you look again. And she looked again, and she found, as I have been told, a little shred of cabbage. So never criticize cabbage. Actually, cabbage, if it's nicely cooked, it's really nice. It's amazing. So just this tiny little shred of cabbage, and she gave it to Krishna, and Krishna ate it. And because Krishna is everything, and everything is part of Krishna, when Krishna is satisfied, everything is satisfied, because everything's part of him. So when he's satisfied, he is satisfied. So Devasa Muni and the 60,000 disciples down at the river having a bath suddenly felt like they'd just eaten this giant feast of the most exotic and amazing preparations in huge quantities. And they felt embarrassed. If we go back and she's cooked a big feast for us as we requested, and we are just too full, and we just cannot eat more at all, it's going to look really bad. We're going to look really bad. So they just left. They didn't even say that, you know, we've got to go, sorry. We'll come back some other time for lunch. They just didn't show up. A no-show. Yes, so like this. Draupadi, if we take it, it was Draupadi's pot. Draupadi was protected by Krishna. So much protected by the Lord. And of course, Lord Krishna protected her specifically from Dushasana. From Dushasana, who tried to undress her in public. So, like this, Draupadi was always given great, great mercy by Lord Krishna. All right, let's see. Okay, I think we'll finish here, and we will continue tomorrow night from verse 40. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.